Tri-City Amateur Radio Club TipsNet. Calling the Tri-City TipsNet for Wednesday, November 11th, the year 2020. Good evening. Welcome to the Tri-City Amateur Radio Club TipsNet. This is Kilo Charlie 1 Tango Whiskey Romeo. My name is Tim, and I'm located in Groton, Connecticut. I will be your net control station for this evening. Membership in the Tri-City Amateur Radio Club is not necessary for participation. All licensed radio amateurs are welcome to check into the net. Those that do not wish to check in are certainly welcome to listen. This net operates on the 147.060 MHz repeater with a PL tone of 156.7 Hz. If needed, the secondary is 146.67, also with a PL tone of 156.7 Hz. This net is held each Wednesday evening starting at 7 p.m. local time with various net controllers on a rotating basis. This net is intended to provide an informal operating environment for new operators as well as for experienced amateurs. The purpose of this net is to, number one, provide a venue for presenting questions and obtaining answers and advice related to amateur radio, and two, also to promote good fellowship among amateur radio operators and to encourage the use of good operating procedures. Let me reset the repeater. TipsNet is a directed open net, and that means we call for a round of check-ins, and when we have everyone checked in, we'll go down through the list for comments and questions. During the check-in, please state if you have a question for the net. We'll ask you for that question after everyone has checked in. There are three sections to the TipsNet. First, the open net with rounds of questions and comments as just described. Second is a section for announcements about upcoming events and items of interest. And thirdly, there's an opportunity for those that wish to swap, sell, or are looking for amateur radio-related items. Unless otherwise directed, all communications should be directed to the net control station. When checking in into the net, please say, "This is," and then release the mic button and listen to ensure that no one else called in at the same time you have. Once you're sure you have the repeater, then press the mic again and slowly give your call sign phonetically so that the net control can jot it down and get it correct, along with your name and location, and if you have a comment or question. This is the Tri-City Amateur Radio Club TipsNet, and this is Net Control Station Kilo Charlie 1 Tango Whiskey Romeo, and we'll start taking check-ins now. Please come with your call sign slowly.
Chuck in Groton. No questions. Good evening.
Here it is. November Kilo 1 Victor. Steve Coventry. No questions yet.
Okay, so far we have Chuck, W1FJW, and Steve, MK1B. Any further check-ins, please come with your call sign now.
There is
Kilo 1, Juliet, Mike, November, Jerry in Preston. Good evening.
This is Kilo 1 Delta Charlie Tango Dave, also in Preston. No questions.
Okay, very good. We picked up Jerry, K1JMN, and Dave, K1DCT. Any further check-ins, please call now. Okay, very good. We'll go ahead and get started with the net tips net this evening. We actually do have a question on the table, and this is from Kevin, KA6PBG, who had a prior commitment, so he could not join us here this evening. However, he had an interesting question dealing with the CSS tones or PL tones. So let me read the question to you, and then we can consider that and chew the fat on it. His question is, how are CTCSS tones determined? It seems to be fairly random. The difference in the hertz between any two adjacent CTCSS tones, or PL tones, runs roughly between 2 and 7 hertz. Spacing seems to be greater at the higher the tone frequencies are. Is there a reason these exact tone frequencies were used? Was there a formula of some kind employed to decide what the tones would be? And that is his question, and he is recording this evening, so he will be able to listen to the answers, so no making stuff up. no, that's fine. Okay, so that's the question we have on the table. I do have a comment that I'll add on top of that, dealing with EchoLink. I thought that the Salem EchoLink had a special setting so that it would let people know when they were getting close to timeout, and it turns out that the setting is actually on the client software. In other words, my software, my EchoLink that I'm using here at the house to connect to the EchoLink node at Salem. So I'll talk about that settings and all that later on in the evening after we get through with Kevin's question about the CTCSS tones and how were they determined to be used, and was there a formula or a particular reason why those particular tones were chosen. And let's start with Chuck and see if he has any thoughts on this or anything else you'd like to bring to the table. W1FKW, KC1TWR, and the tips net.
Well, I just started researching by opening up my Yaesu manual for one of the mobile rigs and noted that the lowest frequency is 67 hertz and the next one is 2.3 higher and the highest frequency is 254.1, which is 3.8 hertz, something like that, and I'm thinking as the frequency goes up, the tones get further apart because the at the time when they were put together, I suspect they used crystals or coils and capacitors. Let me reset. And the higher frequencies could be determined with less accuracy. So they probably maintained something like a percentage. And as the frequency went up, the step got bigger because it was more or less a fixed percentage. But that's just a guess. Back to net, W1FJW.
Well, that's an interesting observation, and there's a certain amount of logic to that that lends itself to my thinking that that could be the case. But maybe somebody else has an idea or has some knowledge about this. Let's move on to Steve, NK1B. This is KC1TWR and the Tip Snack.
NK1V. That's actually a good question. I actually have no idea. I understand the concept behind CTCSS tones and so on, and the above mentioned chart. And one thing I did notice, though, that I found odd is that in certain areas, and not necessarily the same group that would own repeaters, but in certain areas, it seems like certain tones are used are much more popular, like the 67.0 or the 88.5. I think the other one I see a lot is just the 110.9. And then there's a lot of other ones that I've just never seen, even going to other places around the country, or you don't see them that often. So I don't know why some would be more popular than others, if it has something to do with functionality or just different repeaters come equipped better for different ones or not. That's a very interesting question, and I never really thought much of it until it was asked. Back to net, NK1V.
Okay. Yes, I agree. It is a very interesting question. We'll move on to Jerry, who's newer to amateur radio than I am, but maybe he's heard something or remembers something from one of the lessons when he was getting ready to get his licenses, and see if he can bring shed any light to this subject. K1JMN, KC1TWR, and the TipsNet.
K1TWR, K1JMN. Yes, I'm sorry to say I do not have an answer for that. I'm actually struggling with one question of my own, especially when it comes to the DTMF signal. Not that they're multiple signals, but how do you set a radio to either transmit it or receive it? I don't understand that. That's partly due to my being a novice to this hobby. Back to KC1TWR, K1JMN.
Well, that's a very good question there, Jerry, and very apropos, seeing as we just saw an email come out from the Raison Club that they're going to have a fox hunt this Saturday. And this is not where they're just putting out a box. There'll actually be a person out there playing the part of Fox. And so that's good. But when they do put out boxes, and I think there actually are boxes involved in this one Saturday, part of how to trigger the box in order to respond and say, yes, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here, is to send a DTMF tone, which I believe you send via the keys on the front of the microphone. Of course, if you have a microphone that doesn't have keys, now that's a horse of a different color, or a microphone of a different color. But maybe Dave has got some experience with that, either talking about the CTCSS tones and where they have came from, or about DTMF. Let's find out. K1BCT, KC1TWR, and the TipsNet.
All right, well, good evening to all. This is K1DCT. Let's see if I can remember what I was supposed to talk about. Yes, the CTCSS. I don't know why they're spaced out that way, but I can tell you it's a standard by the Electronic Industries Association. And the term that we use a lot, the PL, actually stands for private line, which was a Motorola trademark. General Electric Radio called theirs channel guard. so sometimes you'll see CG, not as much as BL. BL seems to get thrown around a lot, but so it's a standard that was set up by this association, and why they're spaced out that way, I don't really know. Let's see, in the early days, and I'm going back about 40 years, sometimes they'd have repeater wars. People would have repeaters on the same frequencies, and then they'd decide to put PLs on them, and everything was done at random, we'll say. And that brought about some of these frequency coordinators for sometimes by state. Some of the bigger states have multiple frequency coordinators, and so that's how you would get a repeater pair. And typically you'll find in a lot of states, like here in Connecticut, like the eastern side of the state, we use PL or tone frequency of 156.7, and there's a few others kicking around. The 110.9 is pretty popular. So they did that way back because it, you know, before all this programmable stuff, if you installed a PL board in your radio, it had one frequency. You set it to a frequency and that was it. So if every repeater was on a different tone, then, you know, you'd have to leave that board hanging out and keep a pencil handy to change the dip switches. Let me drop it for a second. Or buy one of the fancy devices that had a rotary switch where you could get to all the... So I think I covered it all on PL tones. Now let's see, DTMF, that's dual tone multi-frequency. And it's standard, to use another trademark, touch tone, just like your telephone. Every time you push a button, there are actually two frequencies generated, hence the dual tone. And there's a place to look that up, and I could certainly look it up, but I'm not going to bore you with all the details. But, you know, each row has a frequency, so the 1, 2, 3 would have one frequency, and then coming down the columns, it would be a different frequency. So one would put out, you know, from row one and column one. And so that's how that's all laid out. So, and it's a pretty handy signaling device, and it works. It's been working for years. So I think I covered it all. If not, I'll stumble back on it later. K1DCT, back to net.
Okay, thank you, Dave, for that explanation on both subjects. And before we continue, I'd like to put out another call to anybody else that would like to join the TIPSNet. We're talking about CTCSS tones. Where do they come from? Why did they choose the ones that they did? And also DTMF, and a little bit about that, and how to use it on a radio. What's the mechanical way of using it, as it were. So if anybody else would like to join the TIPSNet this evening, please come with your call sign.
Good evening, K1IKE.
Okay, good evening, Joe, K1IKE. Any further stations that would like to join, please call now. Okay, very good. Joe, we're going to give you instant service. I don't know how long you've been listening. We've been talking about something you and I talked about just recently, which is the CTCSS tones, and Kevin's question about why they're spaced the way they are, why the frequencies were chosen, and also Jerry had a question, but I think it was more in line with how does he actually use it on the radio. It was a good explanation of how it works from Dave, but maybe when we get back to Jerry, we'll find out what kind of radio and microphone he has and whether he even has the buttons on his microphone to deal with that. But in the meantime, Joe, we're going to go ahead and give you the mic and see what you have for us for that or anything else you'd like to bring to the table. K1IKE, KC1TWR, and TipsNet.
Good evening to all on frequency. Well, I'll start with when David and I were young hams and radios were made of wooden nails. We didn't have PL tones. We just had transceivers and very simple. And then back then it didn't matter too much because there was only one or two repeaters in an area and interference on the same frequency was very rare. But then as FM grew, we had to implement PL tones, which caused quite a lot of wars with people that didn't have PL decks in their old radios. And there was a lot of fights at clubs and resignations, and it became very political. But we were forced to go to PL, which is actually a good thing. Because, as David said, you could only program one frequency, one PL tone into these decks, usually, that you would install in your old rig. We kind of standardized 110.9 and 156.7 were two of the tones common to Connecticut. Other states had other frequencies. I believe, thinking in the past, the reason for the strange numbers of the PL tones is to space them out so they're not harmonically related. I haven't done the math, but I think you'll find that if you multiply any tone by 2, 3, or 4, you'll find it will not fall on the on any other frequency, so they're very carefully spaced out. But what Chuck said, the higher frequencies have wider spacing due to component value tolerance is interesting. That's an interesting point. And that very well might be true. There are some PL tones you want to stay away from. Anything harmonically related to 60 hertz, 60 hertz, 110, 120, 180, 240, and so forth. You don't want to use like 179.9 because it's the third harmonic of 60 hertz. And I had a public safety system I troubleshot that used 179.9, and every time they drove by three phase power or other things, their receivers would open up and they would hear noise and they couldn't figure it out. Well, nobody else used 179.9 because that's a bad tone. Let me see. Too long. My other thought was if you don't have a touch tone microphone, some radios can be programmed for auto patch where it'll send touch tones for you. So there's a good chance that if you have such a rig, although you don't have a touch tone microphone, somehow you might be able to program it to send and auto patch 1 or 0 or whatever's required to use during the fox hunt. With that, back to net control, K1IKE.
Okay, Joe, your time was impeccable. You exceeded the echoing timeout by about 2 seconds, so it worked out just about perfectly. Thank you very much for that explanation on both counts. And when we get back to Jerry, we'll find out if he does have a microphone with buttons on it, 1 through 9 or 1 through 10 or what have you, and be a lot easier that way, that's for sure. Okay, let's move around to the top of the list again. And I did want to mention with the Echolink and Joe, I brought to Joe the fact that I was really pleased by the fact that my Echolink would give me an alarm about 20 seconds before I was going to time out. And I thought that was coming from the his node, from the Echolink server node. And Joe discovered, no, it's not. It's actually something everybody can set up on their own Echolink. There are two places, one within Tools and Preferences, and the other one within Tools and Setup. In Tools and Setup, under Timing, there's a transmit time limit that you can set to, you know, whatever you think that the time limit is on a particular Echolink node, which Joe's and mine are both 210 seconds. And then under Preferences and under Signals, there's a button for alarm that you can set. And as long as that's not set to none, it will then give an alarm when you get close to that time limit. So that's kind of handy. But let's go ahead with the second round and see what people have learned from all these comments about CTCSS tones and any further thoughts about Jerry's question about DTMF tones and buttons. W1FJW, KC1TWR, and the TIPSnet.
Okay, thank you, Tim. K1JMN. Yeah, I found my answer in my manual, my CD manual. I had to pop it into the computer and do a search for DTMF. And I found my answer, and I found out how to install it on my radio, how to set it up. So that'll be some fun to play with. Thank you all, and I appreciate the effort. Okay, K1JMN, back to net.
Okay, Jerry, very glad to hear that you found the information there, and hopefully that'll work out for you. You should be able to test it with one of the Foxes that gets put out, either by Chuck or Mark. I forgot his call sign already. K-E-1-I-U, I believe. And or Bob, W1RPQ, because they all put them out in this area. So that should be good. Okay, let's move on to Chuck and see what his comments might be for the second round about CTSS or anything else. W1FJW, KC1TWR, and the TIPSnet.
Well, don't really have much to add. DTMF, because you have two tones, and that's pretty popular because secondhand telephone company equipment handles the dual tone multi-frequency stuff. So you go through the ads in the back of QST and you see various remote control devices, and all of them use DTMF. It's a fairly standard way to control it. Back to net, W1FJW.
Thank you, Chuck. And yeah, I seem to remember that. Oh, golly, I'm going back before 1992. That much I do know. I had a little gadget about the size of a pack of cigarettes, but about half as thick, and it had a little speaker in it, and on the opposite side from the speaker, it had a little keypad, and it was a Radio Shack special type of thing, and if you pressed the buttons on the keypad, the speaker would emit the sounds of those DTMF tones, and we would use that on the telephone. And I can't remember if that was to use a rotary phone and being able to pretend it was touch tone, or if it was that we would call and there were certain places you had to type in numbers and use the button on the phone, which we didn't have we only had a rotary phone at the time. So something like that. Anyhow, let's go ahead and move on to Dave. And nope, I take that back. I got a little out of order here. But my apologies, Steve. We're going to move on to Steve, see if he has something additional on that or some other subject he'd like to talk about. NK1B, KC1TWR, and the tip set.
NK1B. I have nothing additional, but I did get one of my questions answered, which was why certain tones are more popular in certain areas, and that makes perfect sense. Matter of fact, I've looked at some older 2-meter or 6-meter radios and stuff, and didn't really understand the whole board thing and how the PLs worked and stuff, because it was kind of, there'd be like little DIN switches in the back and crazy stuff that I wasn't all that familiar with. So I've kind of, but that would make perfect sense that it would be a certain tone would be preferred, and all the repeaters could use as long as they're on different frequencies in the area, and it would save you from having to switch around either a physical switch, or if you could only afford the one tone, or you know, the one tone, that's all you'd have, and you'd be all alone if they use a different one. So good. That was it seems like I ran across that before, but forgot all about it, and I got that question answered, so I appreciate that. Back to net, NK1B.
Okay, very good. Very good indeed. Before we continue, I'll do another call-out. This is the Tri-City Amateur Radio Club Tips Net, open to any and all amateur radio operators that would like to pop in with either a question or a comment or just to join the net. If you would like to join, please come now with your call sign. Okay, let's get back into going down the list here, and next we're going to turn to Dave and see what he thinks about all the information Joe gave us, and anything else that has perked his amateur radio interest this week he might want to bring to the table. K1DCT, KC1TWR, and TipsNet.
All right, well, nothing too much to add, but I'll pull a Kevin here. I've got a funny little story, or at least I think it's funny. Because something Joe said, you know, there were radios made out of wooden nails. When he said that, it takes me back to a very early Star Trek episode where Kirk and Spock, maybe even McCoy, end up back in time somehow, and they need to construct a radio or something. And of course, Mr. Spock, being the science guy, he's got to do all that. And of course, he's doing it with, you know, vacuum tubes and things like that, instead of, you know, his fancy little tricorder and all that good stuff. So, and he made some comment about, you know, working with bear claws and stone knives. So that's, yeah, that's how it was back then, way back. So that's it. Back to that K1DCT.
Well, thank you, Dave, and that's very true. It's interesting the changes that have happened, but I kind of look at the similarities between cars and amateur radios. You go back far enough, and amateur radios were built literally out of scrap metal and wires and things of that nature. And cars were built without all the computers, all the anti-smog devices, all the safety features that we have today. So basically, if you can get the engine running and get it hooked up to the rear wheels and some way to tell the front tires which way to go, you're pretty well all set. Now, people have pretty much stopped working on their own cars because there's just too many integrated gadgets and electronics and sensors and all kinds of things. You need a computer to figure out what's going on inside an engine, transmission, or what have you. And similar to the radios, I look around at the My Kenwood D710, it's got a couple of removable parts, but everything is service mount technology and multi-sided boards. And good heavens, it takes a real specialist to work on it. So times have changed, that's for sure. Okay, let's move on to Joe and see what he thinks about the DTMF or about any other interesting things that he might want to bring to the table. K1IKE, KC1TWR, and the TIPSNET.
K1IKE. Well, when I made the comment of radios being made out of wood and nails, I literally meant that. And it was a little before my time, but people used to take a board, and that was the chassis, and put some nails in a circle and wind a coil around it. And so literally you can say some radios back in the 1920s, 1930s, 40s, maybe before my time, were made of wood and nails. Composed some of the construction. Yeah, the little brown Radio Shack touchtone encoder, I had one of those too, and I used it. Back in the early days, touchtone was an option you had to pay for, and you had to rent a phone from the phone company. So those of us who were not well endowed with cash would either clandestine use a phone, but of course you couldn't use it unless the phone company turned on the touchtone option. So let me make sure I don't time it out. So the little touchtone encoder that Radio Shack used, a little brown handheld unit, was handy for retrieving messages from answering machines or activating something that needed touchtones. And there was touchtones and there was MF, multi-frequency. They were a different set of tones. Within the phone company, when I worked there, we used MF tones, and that's the tones that people would use to cheat the phone company by making long-distance calls. Not that I ever did that. So, and that's about all I've got from here. So I'll pass it back to Net Control, K1IKE.
Thank you, Joe. As you were talking, you reminded me of my parents buying a couple of boxes of Captain Crunch. And I believe it was Captain Crunch that had the whistle in it, and telling us to get out of the bedroom. And we'd be in there with the phone and the door closed, and we kept hearing the whistle going off. And not understanding that, if I remember right, that was a way of bypassing and making long-distance calls without being charged. So, because that whistle would also make that two-tone DTMF-type tone that the phone company needed to make the long-distance calls. So, quite fascinating. Okay, each person in turn has pretty much said that they've discussed everything they want to discuss, so I think we're kind of at the end of the first section of the net. But let me just open up the floor and ask if anybody else wants to check in, or if anyone else has any other comments they'd like to make in the first section of the TIPS net. If you do, please come with your call sign now. Okay, we'll go ahead and start the second section of the TIPSNET. Now, does anyone have any announcements about upcoming events or items of interest? I will start off by saying that there's the Red Cross MCOM simulated emergency test this coming Saturday. And there'll be more information that posted on the Tri-City website and be sent out to the various clubs. It's where there's the national portion of it, where they're looking for people to send in WinLink messages, and using the templates within WinLink, specifically the ARC-213 form. And Mike W8CY, the Connecticut Area's SEC, has sent out a letter that has all the information he would like put into it, and he's not looking for any embellishments or additions or anything else, just you know, basically copy, put it in there, and send it so that they can prove that we have the capability of transferring information in a Red Cross format, since it's a Red Cross event. But then there'll be a local event, which involves people, amateur radio operators in Territory 4 here, going to the various Red Cross regional shelters or the EOCs, or from the EOCs if they happen to be inside of one. We're not asking anybody to go inside of a building. Just get to the general location. And anyhow, more will be in the email. Okay, any other announcements or items of interest that people would like to comment on, please come now with your call sign.
K1IKE.
K1IKE, please proceed with your item.
Yeah, I'd just like to announce that, if you don't know, I've got the K1IKE repeater on 2 meters on the air now. It's been up for a few months now, and it's playing quite well, except for a little bit of an antenna problem, which comes and goes. It's here in East Haddam on Mount Parnassus, which isn't a very big mountain, but it's a hill, a bump here of about 600 feet. And it plays well, and we have a nice group of guys beginning to build up there. There's usually some activity during the daytime. You're welcome to join us. It's 147.015. I've heard a couple of you guys on it already, and the PL, now that we're talking about it, is 110.9. I hope I got that right. Yes, PL 110.9, and it's 147.015. We'd like to hear from people. Back to net.
Oh, thank you, Joe. That reminds me, I'm about to put my one of my 2-meter radios back in the car, and I'll make sure and put that frequency in there. I don't think I can quite hit it from my home, but at least when I'm on the road, I can do that. Anybody with questions or comments for Joe, please come now. Okay, any other items for the second section of the TIPSNet? Any other announcements, items of interest, other than the Fox Hunt that's going to be this Saturday? Please go ahead and come with your call sign now. Okay, moving on to the third and final section of the TIPSNet for today, November 11th, 2020. Now looking, is there anyone that wishes to swap, sell, or are looking for amateur radio-related items? If so, please call now.
K1JMN.
K1JMN, please proceed with your item.
All right, thanks, Tim. Yeah, I'm looking for a 2-meter, either a mobile or a benchtop radio from my neighbor and my good friend Dennis, KC1, NYB, and... Well, he's in the market for a radio, and we're looking for something that's slightly used, but functional, and something that's easy to use as well. So if anybody has one, let me know. This is K1JMN, Jerry in Preston. All right, good afternoon, and back to net.
Okay, Jerry, and a quick question, especially if it's a mobile rig, will we need a power supply for it as well?
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Yeah, correct. We'll need a power supply, and looking for one of those as well. Yeah, I always forget to mention that. But yes, absolutely. Also a power supply. All right, well, thank you. And back to that, K1JMN.
Okay, anybody with questions or comments or advice for Jerry for looking for the 2-meter radio and or power supply for Dennis, KC1NYB, call now, please. Okay, any other business before we close the net? Any other check-ins, comments, crosstalk, items of interest? Please come with your call sign now. Okay, very good. Not every night has to go the full hour, and not every night has to go fast. Sometimes we just get done with what we're talking about and move on. So, I'd like to thank everyone who participated in the Tri-City Amateur Radio Club Tips Net this evening, and also thanks to all who stood by as we conducted the net this evening. We'd also like to thank W1AN for allowing us the use of the W1BX repeater. Also, K1IKE for the EchoLink note that I'm talking on, and that would be Whiskey 1 Delta X-Ray Dash Romeo W1DX-R in EchoLink. And also Kevin, KA6PDG, for recording each of these tips nets to make them available for those who could not make the net. And they are available at the website am1700.org/tipsnet. That's Alpha Michael 1700.0 Oscar Romeo Gertrude Golf, whatever it is for G, stroke TipsNet. The Tri-City Amateur Radio Club sponsors this net and has their meeting on the second Tuesday of each month, which was last night, normally at the American Red Cross office in Montville. However, the meetings have now been on Zoom, which gets posted on the Tri-City website. The meetings start at 7 p.m. and are open to all interested persons, licensed or not. The club information can be found at www.tricityarc.net. This net will meet again next Tuesday. Correction, got my days mixed up. This net will meet next Wednesday at 7 p.m. on this frequency. And we're always looking for volunteers that would like to try being net control and tips net. It can be a fun experience. I now return the repeater to regular amateur use. This is Kilo Charlie 1, Tango Whiskey Romeo, wishing everyone good evening and 73.
KC1TWR disconnected. connected. KC1NCA.
This is KC1NCA, over.
KC1NCA, good evening. K1IKE, the handle's Joe.
Hi, Joe. This is KC1NCA. My name is Ray. I live in Charlestown, Rhode Island. How are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing well. Good to hear you on Echo Link here. We just finished up a net here. I don't know if you were listening to it. They have the TIPS net that's on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Just kind of going over amateur radio subjects and things like that. I don't know. Were you actually listening into it? Over.
No, actually, I just logged in. For the last 2 hours, I've been working on a microphone problem here with Echo Link, and I finally got it down. And as you can tell, I got my microphone back, and so I'll be on Echo Link more often. I normally don't connect to the Salem repeater by Echo Link. I usually, just connect to it by simplex. Over.
Yeah, I think you said you were in Long Island, so you might be just across the sound from us here. I don't know. But the KC1 call threw me a little bit. I figured you were over here on this side of the pond. Yeah, Echo, I wondered if you, whereabouts you are, and are you running Windows 10 by any problems, by any chance, on that computer?
Actually, I'm in Rhode Island, right next to Connecticut. I'm right on the coast of Rhode Island. Right next to Westerly, and yes, I'm running Windows 10, and I finally got things straightened out. All that I had to do is go to my privacy settings and enable the stupid microphone to be on. How it turned off, I have no idea. A lot of strange things have been happening with my computer lately. I had trouble with my D drive. I couldn't download any programs off of CD drives or anything. And I finally did a YouTube search and found a quick fix, and that was only a 2-minute quick fix. Really, really simple. I thanked the guy profusely.
Yeah, thank heavens for YouTube. I've used it for fixing everything from a washer to a car to just practically anything and everything. Got to be a little careful, though. Some guys know what they're doing and some guys don't, but you review a few YouTubes and you can usually fix a lot of things. Yeah, the reason why I asked you if you're running Windows 10 is that was one of their features, their security features, was to arbitrarily shut your microphone off thinking it was a security issue that nobody could listen in on you. And they didn't tell anybody about it. It was just in one of the upgrades that you can't avoid now. Let me reset the here. I put the Echo Link on this repeater a month or two ago, and I just last night I logged into it remotely. It's at the site, and it told me it was waiting to do Windows 10 upgrades, and I dreaded to do it, but I did it, and fortunately everything went well last night, and it still works. So Windows likes to tell you the way they think you should have your computer set. I suggest you write down your settings, your soundboard settings in Echo Link, because they might just change. I had trouble with mine, and it's hard to remember what it used to be. KC1 NCA, and I'm sorry, I thought you said Long Island. It's Rhode Island. My apologies. K1IKE.
Yeah, K1IKE, KC1NCA. Yeah, I think my last Windows update, I don't know, maybe at the end of October, I think it was. I think that's what screwed up my D drive, because it was working fine, and then I got a new piece of equipment for my rig, and I needed to download the driver off of a disk, and it just wasn't reading it, and I was having a heck of a time. And like I say, the guy on YouTube gave me a quick fix, and now I was able to read it, print it, and I even played some music over it. Over.
Like I was saying, thanks heavens for YouTube. Hey, it's after 8, and I got to call somebody at 8 o'clock here. I'm running it a little late here, so I'm going to have to say 73s. I just wanted to come back to you to tell you that you were checking in here okay on Echo Link. So, Ray, 73 for now, and I have to run here after your final. K1IKE.
This is KC1 NCA. I'm 73 and clear, and I thank you for the brief conversation and helping me check out my new microphone settings here. I thank you very much, sir, and I'm clear. Thank you.
KC1 NCA disconnected.